From ABC News Radio, KMET, 1490 in Southern California. This is Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with your host, Tyler Jorgensen.
All right, I want to welcome everybody out to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio. We have a special guest today, the author of Great at Work, Morten T. Hansen. Now, Morten, do you always use the T initial, or is that just for the book?
Yeah, just for the book. Yeah, go by Morten.
Well, Morten, we really appreciate you coming out and being willing to share what's going on. Tell us a little bit about why you wrote this book.
Yeah, there are two reasons, really. I mean, first, when I started out my career, I had no work experience and I was entering Boston Consulting Group in London, and I had this great idea for how to succeed. I would work crazy hours, right? So 60, 70, 80, 90 hours per week. Then I came across some colleagues who were working fewer hours than me, and they did even better work than me. And I found that very puzzling. I mean, I did well, but they did even better. And they weren't there, you know, at 2 a.m. at night. So I always pondered, what did they do, right? Later on, I wrote a book with Jim Collins called Great by Choice, which was a sequel to Jim's Good to Great.
Right.
And the book was about, you know, how can companies do better? And then I thought, after we finished that project, I thought, well, what about writing a book like that for individuals, managers and employees in company? And finally figuring out what I had sort of discovered back then in the BCG days, you know, how can you actually do better work? And so I set out to study this a project, 5,000 people for this book, and to answer a very simple question, but fundamental question, which is, why do some people perform better than others in their jobs?
Okay, so that's a good question. And it does beg the question of defining the word better, right?
Yeah, so the way we did it was just to look at job performance as perceived by your boss or yourself or subordinate, sort of like a combination of those things.
Gotcha.
And in terms of your quality, in terms of meeting your objectives, in terms of results and so on, right? So it's a subjective measure, but let's face it, in most jobs, there is a subjective element to someone's job performance appraisal, right? I mean, even in sales, we actually have hard numbers. There is some guidance, right? You know, relative to expectations and so on. So that's really what we're looking at, is job performance, right? It's like, why do some people perform better in their jobs? And it's a fascinating question. And there are 200, 300 pieces of advice out there what you should do.
Absolutely.
And what we found in our study is that we found 7 key practices that explain about 2/3 of the difference in performance evaluation among those people. So you don't need to, you know, do well across 200 kind of factors. You could sort of look at a few of them.
So I appreciate that you took that very economic approach, very scientific approach, because so many books that are written on performance are really opinion pieces. This is what worked for me. And that's great,
right.
But you know, it's not time proven or extrapolated across the population. So you used, how many people were in your study?
5,000.
Wow. So that would be statistically significant, right?
That's what I'm looking for. Exactly. Yeah. Because, and also the other problem is that we look at sort of success bias.
Yes.
We ask successful people, why were you successful?
Right.
And they say, well, for example, they say, I had a lot of passion for what I was doing. And what we're not looking at then are people who are very passionate in their jobs and they failed, right?
Sure.
So in the 5,000, we are looking at low performers, mid performers, and high performers.
Fascinating. What was the one piece of data that came out of that was the most surprising to you?
I think it's the first principle that I call do less than obsess.
Yeah, I see that in your bullet points. I'm super excited to hear.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we live in a do more culture, which means we're trying to take on as much as we can, as many assignments and many tasks, and to impress our superiors. We fill up our day with lots of things, right? We say, how much can I do in the hours I have? It's kind of the way we think about it, right?
Right.
I did that at BCG, right? I think I can do, I was young and healthy. I can do 90 hours a week. How much can I get done in 90 hours, right? That's how we think about it. So we go to more meetings. We have business travels. We talk to customers. We just do a lot of things. And we spread ourselves thin in the process. What we found is that the top performers do the opposite. They have hyper-focused. They select a few things. That's a do less thing, right? It's not like they're slackers working less.
No.
They're just narrowing their scope, right? and figuring out what is the most important thing I can do, what is the most valuable thing I can do. But that's the first component. I mean, we always heard you should set priorities, right? You should choose a set of priorities. Yes, they're doing that, but they're doing it more intensely than most of us. But that is not enough. If that's all you do and then you sort of have average effort, you're not a top performer. You need to do the obsession part in addition. And that's, I use that word deliberately. It doesn't sound healthy.
Right.
But it can be, right? Which is, the way to find that is targeted, intense effort into those few things. And that's really what creates the best performance.
I've heard that described, this concept, as looking each day for the one big domino, where if you knock that domino over, all the other little dominoes and little tasks become either take care of themselves or become obsolete.
And, yeah, I think, right. Yeah, I would qualify that as a little bit. I would say that, first of all, I think it depends on the job, how many dominoes we're talking about.
Correct.
So in my job, I'm writing a book, you have one thing to get done, right?
That's right.
But if you're, you know, handling 10 customers, you got to sort of have these 10 customers, not 50, but 10.
Sure.
Yeah, so it depends, and so, right? Yeah, and then I would also say we also need to think about sort of like long-term. Okay, so what is the most important thing I need to get done the next 6 months, a year? And just putting out fires on a daily basis. But with those qualifications, I totally. Yeah.
So would you say that in your study, you found that the people, the top performers, the ones that were more successful, not only did this on a daily basis, but also understood what their one biggest goal for the year was and the one biggest goal for the month was? Like they understood macro and then letting the little stuff get out of their way.
And this is the second principle, they actually did something even more important, which was they asked themselves, not what are my goals for the year or for the month or for the week? Because those goals are set by someone else. They're usually a job specification. They're conventions. You know, I should do X, Y, and Z. Right. They asked instead, they took a step back and said, what's the value I can create here? And that's a very different question. And there's different metrics. Because you say, okay, I got this job, but maybe there is more value, more, in other words, more benefits that I can provide for the people who are the beneficiaries of my work. It could be customers or internal people, right, in your own company. And then they say, okay, if I can provide that value, maybe I'll change the way I work. Now, what is the one or two big things of value that I can provide is really the question. I'll give an example.
Yeah.
So one of the managers in the study is Hartmut Göritz, who is a manager of a container terminal in Tangier in Morocco.
Okay.
In APF terminals, they run 55 terminals around the world. It's a very large company. They run many here in the United States. Now, when he came to this terminal, so this is a large container terminal where ships come in and they offload the containers and they off they go on trucks. The predecessor had sort of looked at many different ways to improve revenues by adding services. In other words, doing more stuff.
Right.
Weighing the trucks, taking things out of the containers, all kinds of things. And he said, well, what is the one thing that our customers really want us to excel at? And it's basically what they call throughput, which is get the containers off the ship, onto the trucks as soon as possible and out of to the destination and the other way around, right? And he said, all this like stuff is creating distractions. So let's get rid of that, close it down, and focus on the one valuable activity. And once we got that, let's improve it. Faster, better, higher quality, more accuracy, on and on and on. And he worked on that. And he improved the throughput rate by 33%. With the same resources, the same staff, the same equipment, and so on. And that's a great example of someone who says, this is the one valuable thing that we need to get done here. Let's forget about all the other, you know, declutter our kind of activities.
So they go beyond just what the task at hand is, right? And they look more in the why and the who they're serving and what what the real reason for that task existing is, right? And
exactly.
Yeah. Create value from tasks.
Right. And what it creates is innovation. Innovation at work. Because if you say value, you start thinking, well, what is it I can do here that is different? And back to Hartmut Göritz, one thing, so he was responsible for this terminal sitting in Tangier, in the city of Tangier, right? And it's, okay, if throughput is what matters, what if there's a labor strike in my terminal? What if the weather is bad? The ships cannot come in. Ooh, I need to think about this differently. Maybe I need to work with the other terminals in the area so those ships can be rerouted. So he created a rerouting service so that these containers can come on and off those ships very quickly.
Oh, wow.
Very valuable for customers. But again, it's an innovation, right? Because you're thinking value.
That's fascinating. Yeah, really thinking beyond that task. And one of the other things that I see kind of listed, and we hear it more and more, I think we're in an era where people are understanding the work smarter, not harder. Mm-hmm. You're right, though, in what you said earlier about the qualification of the obsessed, right? It's easy to say people are very quick to jump on board to not working as hard, but they have to then apply the working smarter.
Yeah.
So what did your study kind of uncover about that?
Yeah. I mean, you have to work smarter, right? I think the whole book is I sort of start framing the book by saying, hey, these principles in this book are about working smarter.
Right.
But what does that mean? It's kind of a bit of an empty slogan. And the opposite would not be true. I mean, who wants to work dumb, right? There's nobody say that, right?
So no one's going to buy into that, yeah.
Exactly. So I'm trying to fill that kind of slogan or concept with very concrete, practical advice that is evidence-based. And so it's true. We have this, we don't want to work less and be slackers, right? That doesn't produce top performance. Let's be clear about that. But obsession means you got to put in that high degree of effort into few things. Now, what I did find, which is very interesting, is that those who do that, so they are obsessing and they're putting in all that intense targeted effort, they are still able to take some extra time off for their private life so that work does not encroach on their private and family life. And so they are top performers and they're able to carve out that extra time. And if you start thinking about it, it makes sense. Because if I'm very focused and applying a lot of effort to excel in those few things, I can then get more control over my life. I don't have to take that, join that phone conference at 9 o'clock on a Sunday evening to join a collaboration project because I said no to that because I'm focusing on the few things that matters, right? So you're kind of controlling work and it gives you this extra family time.
So you just brought something up very subtly about being willing to say no to certain tasks or no to certain things. How do top performers and, how do you recommend handling that and in balancing the expectations that are already there based off your manager or your coworker?
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're going to do less or focus, it means that you have to say no. I mean, that's the operating word becomes you got to be able to discern what to do and what not to do. And of course, that's difficult. Now, if you have what I call a do-less boss, they are hyper-focused, you're in luck, right?
Yeah.
It's easier. But if you have what I call a do-more boss, somebody who is delegating a lot of activities and piling on more work, right? The priority list, it grows, it doesn't shrink. Then it's hard. And this is where you need to learn to manage up. I think one of the most important professional skills today in our hectic 24/7 work life is the ability to say no and to say no in the right way. Because let's think about the opposite. If you become a yes person, it means that, even if you do really good work, or maybe especially because you do good work, people will actually just give you more stuff, right? You become the go-to person because you get it done,
yep.
Right? Then you're sitting at 2 a.m. on a Friday evening, punching work. So what you need to do is to be able to do the opposite, to say no appropriately. So if your boss comes to you and say, can you do this additional project? How do you respond? Right?
Yeah.
It is that one tactic here could be to say, all right, what should I get done first? You're already giving me two projects. Now you're giving me a third. What do I need to get done first? What is most important among those three? And then putting the burden back on the boss because the job of a manager is to prioritize.
Right.
Now, of course, they might come back and say, can't you do all three? Right?
Yeah.
They have to say, no, not if I want to do exceptional work. These two require my full attention. So, and a third one means that we have to postpone or we have to get more resources or we have to prioritize differently. And again, you're now having a dialogue, right? How are we going to get this done? And you have a common interest here with your boss because you're both looking after maximum results. You're not looking to slack off, right? And you need to communicate that. You need to say, the reason we need to prioritize here is because we're looking for the best result. not because I don't want to work.
Right.
Very different.
Yes. Very different. That's fascinating. I think managing up is probably one of the greatest hurdles, right? So you've got, I think people can buy into working smarter. Right. They can buy into doing less and then obsessing and maybe even focusing on value. But that power struggle that exists with a lot of people that have managers that may not be bought into the same philosophy
right.
is probably a challenge. And so I yeah. like how you gave a few tools there for people to work on that
right.
by just asking them the question, but keeping the burden back on the person.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and if you're a manager, you know, if you want to have produce better results in your team, then you need to be more able to prioritize. I mean, that right. that is a technique that would create more results. And it's a little counterintuitive because you think the more you can give people on your team more stuff to do and the more they can produce, the better you're all going to be. And the opposite is actually the case.
Absolutely.
Great performance does not come from piling work onto people. It comes from prioritizing work.
And that brings up the point that which I hadn't thought about yet, that not only are these great tools and ways to look at work as an employee, but if you're the manager, you need to have these things in mind. How do I get my staff and the people reporting to me to focus right. on value? How do I get them to focus yeah. on, you know, prioritizing and those sorts of things? And right. I hadn't thought about that. And yeah. a good manager needs to do these things.
Right, exactly. And so one thing, I think we need a metrics revolution in management
yes.
today. We have the wrong metrics. So as a manager, it's a great question. Do you have the right metrics, the ones that produce the most value, or are they just volume metrics checking boxes, you know?
Right.
Did you get that training seminar done if you're an HR? Okay, yeah, check the box.
Yes.
Wait a minute. What was the value of that yeah. training seminar?
Okay. The checkbox task-based yeah. system has crept through our entire society, not just in work, but in other things where we think by creating a checklist and checking things off that we've had a successful day. But if you don't look at actually what those, is that the right metric?
Yeah.
Is just accomplishing tasks what you wanted to do that day? Or did you actually want to have meaningful relationships or create actual content or
yeah.
produce, you know, actual good value? Those are the metrics. So how do you make that shift?
Yeah. So I think of it as we have volume metrics, which are check the box or other volume metrics. And then we have value metrics. And our society and workplace are full of volume, but not value metrics. So giving a good example of what I mean by the difference here. So one of the people in the study, you know, he was running a logistics operation of a warehouse. He was responsible for shipping products out of the warehouse to corporate customers, right? Equipment.
Right.
And his metric was on-time shipment from the warehouse, right?
Right.
And very sensible metric, right? Lots of people use it. Here's my schedule. Yep. And did it go out when it was supposed to?
Yep.
99% on-time shipment. Impressive, right? That's a volume metric. That's an internal goal. Then they went and surveyed the customers and asked a question to them. And only 65% of the customers said they got equipment when they needed it. That's a value metric. That's about when the customer needs it, which was completely different from when it went out of the warehouse.
Yeah, what's funny is even applying that back to a volume base, like is your volume based metric even accurate, right?
Yeah.
Was on time actually
exactly. right. Yeah, and
so
you think about
value based means yeah. understanding the client.
I mean, think about a medical doctor. You know, they have a metric of the number of patients seen in the office, right? Mm-hmm. That's very productive, right? It's one every 15 minutes. But that's a volume metric. What about the number of times you actually diagnosed correctly and the number of times the remedy was correctly administered? Lawyers, billing by the hour, right? Volume versus the number of times you solve the legal problems for the client. And we can go on and on and on. And in the workplace, many people actually don't even have that. They have busyness. How busy I am is a measure or a proxy for how successful. And then they brag about how many freaking fly miles they have, you know, racking up the miles traveling on business. I mean, flying is not an accomplishment. I mean, let's
right.
be clear about that.
Unless you're the pilot.
Unless you're the pilot. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So
yeah,
we need to have a shift. We need to, and the problem is, the challenge is, the value metrics are more difficult to measure sometimes.
For sure. Yeah.
But we can't just say we should measure what we can measure. We should measure what is important. So the management challenge is to find the right measures.
That makes sense. And so, and I think that comes down to your next kind of point here of like having purpose at work, right? And so in order to like right. really get down to each person in this machine, right? If you're in a large company, really each person needs to start understanding their purpose, what their role is and getting back to the value. Do you think that that's an easy road ahead for large companies and even small companies to make that shift?
No, I don't think it's easy, but I'm hopeful because I think that there's a lot of work we can do to improve sort of the sense of purpose. Now, what I show in my study here and other people have shown that people who have passion and purpose perform better. They apply more energy per hour they work. So we want to infuse work with passion and purpose in order to improve performance and also, you know, to give meaning to people. So it's the job of a manager is to infuse that purpose. Now, I talk in the book about a number of ways you can do that, and it's not an easy thing. But I think here, a lot of managers, they neglect it. They ignore it. They think it's all about setting goals and having bonuses and people will, you know, have the carrot, right?
Right.
But people also want meaning. They want to understand how do actually this, what I do, provide significant impact in the world and for others. I would say one more thing about purpose. I also think we get the notion of purpose wrong. We think it's about social mission only. Right? So am I helping the poor? Am I helping the environment? Right? And most jobs are not doing that. But if we define purpose as do what contributes, then what contributions are I making in my job that matter? Right? That's a much more perhaps mundane, but much more realistic definition of purpose. And if we use that definition, we can find, you know, avenues where people would find their work to be much more purposeful.
And we're going to get that pendulum swinging back, right? It's going to move slowly, but if we can move them back, we can't all of a sudden day one say, hey, I want all of you to apply all of these things and make an entire shift across a 5,000 person company.
But no, it's a step-by-step thing. But management here, you know, as with many other places, right? We, back in the day, we didn't have quality, you know, controls, you know, we had poor quality. Then it come the quality movement and it took many years and it became a lot better. And the same here, right? They're step by step. And I think we can learn how to work better. And these seven evidence-based practices in my book really help a person to work better and to produce better results. And I would say you start with one or you start with small steps, right? You don't sort of start and shift.
Every single thing.
No.
So, you know, I think whenever somebody takes about writing a book, like what you've done with Great at Work, there's obviously the benefit that the reader can get. But I think typically the author tends to grow and change too, right? Mm-hmm. And what major, like, how did you change? What was your biggest shift that happened from going through the exercise of writing this?
Yeah, so I make a confession in the book that if you look at that do less than obsess, I struggle with it. Yeah. I say yes to many things. I'm curious. I like to do things. So I, like so many others, I'm spread too thin.
Sure.
So I'm trying to constantly focus. And obsess over a few things as opposed to doing too many things. And here the other day, my wife said that I'm progressing, so maybe I am.
good. What I always ask this question because I think it's really important that business and all these things that we do in our careers are about creating a life, right? Mm-hmm. And so without accomplishing personal things, you know, mm-hmm. maybe we don't have that purpose. So what's one major item on your bucket list or, you know, call it whatever you want. What's one major thing, one place you want to go, something like that in the next 12 months?
So I would really, really like to go to the Galapagos. But I have not, you know, that would be on my bucket list. And the other place is in the South Pole because I talk about it in the book, but I think that's more challenging to get to the South Pole.
Well, you know, you can.
But I'm trying to. I like traveling and seeing the world, and I would like to go there.
Awesome. Yeah. Very cool.
So, How about you?
For me, So I've got a few, couple of places. I really want to take my wife to Italy this year for our 15th anniversary.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's where my ancestry's from, but I've never been there. And so I'm really hoping to get there. So that's my big one for the year. And then, I've got four kids. So life's just fun chasing all of them.
But that's achievable, you know.
Yeah.
To go to Italy.
I mean, look, the list is long, but that's one that I think
you
got to pick.
Absolutely.
The ones you can accomplish.
Yeah.
What I really appreciate it. Obviously, guys, the book is Great at Work. Morten, if people want to learn more about you and find you, how do they do that?
So the best place is to go to my website, which is my name. So it's www.mortenhansen.com. And let me spell that. MORTENHANSEN. com. And we have some resources there, including a quiz. You can take a brief sort of 7-minute quiz to see how you stack up on those 7 practices vis-a-vis the 5,000 person data set we have. And awesome. That gives you a little bit of an indication of where you should start focusing to improve.
I love that. So I encourage everyone to check out MortonHanson.com, take the quiz, and go grab. I saw Great at Work actually at the airport when I was driving or flying through the other day. So I know it's available wherever you get your books. So check out Great at Work and MortonHanson.com. Morton, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming out. My listeners, it's your turn to go out and do something. Thank you for tuning into Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with myself, your host, Tyler Jorgensen. And I wanted to offer you a special gift. So if you go to bizninja.com/dreamline, I'm going to give you a calculator that will allow you to calculate what your ideal target daily income is in order to live the life that you dream of. To me, life in business is all here just so that we can create the lifestyle that we want. So if you're not doing that, probably because you don't know the exact things that you need to put in place to make it happen. It all starts with beginning with the end in mind. To create your dream line and put your dreams on a timeline at bizninja.com/dreamline.
Thank you for listening to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with Tyler Jorgensen. Please make sure to subscribe so you're first to hear new interviews and episodes. If you found this podcast to be valuable, please share it with a friend. Don't forget to visit our online dojo at bizninja.com to claim your reward for listening to the show.